When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist. And, you know, I expect that I'm going to be doing an episode in the near future about organizing events just hot on the heels of this Kids Read Comics extravaganza that I'm putting together for tomorrow in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I think that there's a lot of information to share there that I think would be helpful to you guys who have been listening to the recent Art and Story episodes, where we've been kind of talking about starting up little arts advocacy scenes in your town. I think there's enough going on that I'm learning that would be really useful to package to give to you guys. And so that's on the docket. But today, look, I need a break from talking about organizing events because I have been up to my ears in it lately, and I want to talk about some fun art stuff, process stuff, theory stuff that I like to talk about, and I'm going to talk a little bit about character design again, which I haven't talked about in a little while, but I've been stealing an hour here and an hour there in between answering emails where people are saying, hey, how come you haven't responded to this yet, to work on some redesigns of the Masters of the Universe characters. Many of you, I'm sure, have seen them, but if you haven't, they're on my blog, comicsaregreat.com/blog. I just finished my 10th one as of the time of this recording. And it's funny, it's turned into a project now. I didn't expect it to be a project. I mean, it literally began with I was watching the new My Little Pony cartoon on the Hub Network, on their website. Just do a search for My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, if you're interested in seeing it. I maintain it's a fantastic cartoon. I mean, as far as art direction goes, they're nice, tight little stories, that the kind of stories that I like to write for things like Sugary Cereals, which I've written in the past at any rate. I was really taken with the fact that here was another example of a cartoon series that boiled down the essence of what made the original intellectual property work, but reinvented it visually and with a few twists in the story to bring it up to date, make it a little bit more modern for modern kids, but keep all the stuff that made the original IP work. So it's familiar to me as somebody who, yes, I own the DVDs of the original My Little Pony series, and I watched it as a kid. But that's not why I liked it. I liked it because they threw out everything that didn't need to be there, and introduced some new things that made it feel fresh, and not only fresh but unique. Like, oh, I never thought of doing it that way. The big case in point before I go into this, like some character design stuff I've been playing with, is if you look at the Transformers animated series from a couple years ago, and the My Little Pony series of this year. A common denominator between the two of them that I think is really fascinating, and I wonder what's in the zeitgeist right now that's making people approach things this way, is the main characters that you're following are not the leaders. If you go back to the original Transformers series from 1984, we're following the big leader of the good guys, Optimus Prime. He leads all the Autobots and Cybertron, and yet he's stuck on Earth with the big, big leader of the bad guys. And it's the same in G.I. Joe, it's the same in Visionaries, it's the same in Inhumanoids. You're dealing with the captains of their respective armies doing battle. And that's a very interesting story to tell. It's very fun to tell, very fun to watch. But in Transformers Animated, they stripped it down to where now we're following Optimus Prime, but he's not at all in any kind of position of high authority or respect amongst his peers. He has been sort of exiled to be a maintenance guy in the outer territories of their government or whatever. And it's watching him prove himself through this adventure. He's fighting the main big bad. Megatron is the leader of all the Decepticons, but so we're watching somebody who's not ready for the job learn the job. And then My Little Pony did something similar, not quite the same, because it's a girl show about ponies and friendship and magic, but there is some danger in it. There's some thrilling escapades. But the ponies that they follow in the story are not the leaders of all the ponies. The great big leader, Princess Celestia, lives in another land, and it's the sort of lead pony we're following is sort of a leader in training who is reporting on what she learned through like a little sequence at the end of the episodes where she writes a little letter to Princess Celestia. This is what I learned this week in all my lessons, and I send off the letter to you so you can see a report on my progress. And I thought, wow. Isn't it interesting that here's two reboots of the original or of some 80s properties where they're taking it, focusing on young people learning to be adults, which I think, I mean, as I'm standing now, as somebody who thinks a lot about writing for young people, I think that's a very interesting place to go. And I think that is what makes a lot of superhero stories really work. Not all of them, because not all superhero stories are that, but when you think about the Spider-Man story, it's about the young boy learning to be a man, and he's sort of being a mirror or vehicle for what young people are going through, preteens are going through, and sort of, as Dan Mishkin has said, if you want to go back and listen to Comics Are Great, Episode 1, I talked with Dan for about an hour and change, and he was talking about how, you know, superheroes are dress rehearsal for adulthood, that kind of thing. So, very interesting. But mostly what I was really gripped with by these reinventions was the visual reinventing of these series. And so I sat down to say, for one of my warm-up exercises a couple weeks back, I said, you know, it'd be really interesting to take Masters of the Universe, a series that really lends itself to reinterpretation, more so than a series like G.I. Joe, and visually reinterpret these characters, and I'll just pick one that's fun to draw, Trapjaw, and that was the first one I did. And I just did it. I played with a style that I've been playing with for some time with some of my little doodle sketches and with some freelance jobs where I was really morphing the proportions of the body, giving a spindly waist, really skinny upper arms and really bulbous lower arms, largely inspired by E.C. Segar of the Popeye comic strips. Also, of the kind of art direction you found in cartoons like Kim Possible, the Disney series, which if you haven't seen it, oh my gosh, I think that's an incredible show. Really, really smartly written and very, very funny. And plus, visually very interesting looking. So I did that one, and it got a good response. And I'll tell you, I really wasn't thinking too hard about how I'd reinterpret the character or how I'd reinterpret the universe. I just thought to myself, what would I make this character look like if I wanted to make a 10 or 11-year-old really excited about this series? How could I modernize him, and how could I use some influences that I think are really interesting to explore a body type that we wouldn't expect from a show that is about fantasy barbarian characters? And what I'm discovering as I'm going through these reinventions is that a lot of the designs of the... let me back up and frame this before I go any further, because I'm already going on 8 minutes into this. I'm not going to give a point-by-point sort of breakdown of how to go about reinterpreting characters, because this is still a little fresh in my mind. I haven't broken it down yet. But what I can share is the thought process that I was going through as I've been working on these. How about that? And you can see if you can glean any takeaway points out of this. This is going to be, I guess this is like half diary, journal cast, half essay, okay? So as I was thinking about it, I was thinking, like, you know, a lot of the designs of these characters were based upon the fact that it was based on a toy line where, in order to keep costs low, they repurposed a lot of parts. If you look at the original toys, a lot of the original He-Man toys, they shared a lot of the same molds. Many characters were just the same character as before, but with a new head and a new paint job. That's why all He-Man characters have the furry underpants, because they basically made one or two pairs of underpants for all of the characters. And there was maybe like three or four different leg configurations for these characters, with a few exceptions like Modulok and whatever. But for the most part, they were very homogenized in their look in, as far as body type goes, and that came from the fact that it was based on a toy line trying to keep costs low. Well, let's throw that out the window then. That was the first thing I thought of. I said, well, if I'm going to reinterpret these characters, let's throw that whole concept out of the window of uniform body type, because cartooning allows us to explore lots of body types, lots of, you know, really tall characters, really squat characters, impossibly squat characters, impossibly tall characters, etc. Why not revel in that flexibility for a change rather than trying to mimic something so that a marketing person will say, ah, now I have a wonderful advertisement for my toy, right? Let's let the art actually do the speaking for a change. So that was the first thing I thought of as I started to explore more characters. And I really just dove into this, not thinking of it as a project, but thinking of it as like, hey, let's try this again on another character. Let's try to get on another character. Let's see what happens. But so then when I started getting to different characters, I started making a list of like, oh, this is what who I do next. That'll be fun to try. Like the character of Whiplash, for example. I decided to start with some villains who I thought were relatively blank slates. And the starting point I seem to rely on in reinterpreting these characters is asking myself what their quote-unquote power is. What is the ability, what is the playability factor of the toy that made that character interesting? So when I got to a character like Whiplash, whose whole deal was he was a lizard guy who when you twisted his waist, it tightened a spring, so then when you released his waist, his shoulders would whip around and this big rubber tail on his back would whip another character. Okay. But when you look at the figure, he kind of has like an alligator ridged pattern going down his back and down his tail. I said, okay, lizard man, alligator. They didn't do a whole lot with his personality in either iteration of the He-Man show. So I felt like, okay, if I'm going to, that was another rule I set for myself with these was, let's honor the original as much as possible. Let's not reinvent them as much as reinterpret them. So when you look at them, you should be able to say that's Whiplash, but interpret them in a way where it's Whiplash as you've never seen him before. Does that make sense? Okay. So when I said alligator, okay, well, let's just take the character and add, to use crass art director talk, let's add 60% more alligator to him. Okay, so he's got to be very wide. And like an alligator is wide. They have very wide bodies. They don't look very mobile. Their limbs are short. If you were to put an alligator on its hind legs, it would naturally hunch over and its head would rest between its shoulders, right? Like halfway down its chest. So that was where I started with that interpretation, body language. And then, okay, well, his head's going to be much larger than it was before because alligators have very large heads. I'm thinking about some of the other characters that I did. Oh, Stratos, for one of the good guys, the king of the birdmen. And I'll admit it, I was very much inspired by how the Transformers animated and My Little Pony series kind of demoted their characters from kingly positions to soldier positions or aspirant prince positions. Okay, well, let's make him a prince. And if he's a birdman, gosh, why does he have to be as human-looking as, say, He-Man or Adam or King Randor? He's a birdman. He's a different race, for crying out loud. And in the other iterations, they only express that by just putting him in a gray suit and giving him, like, a feathery beard. Even in the Mike Young He-Man series, they didn't do a ton of reinterpretation of the character. So, Birdman, well, let's make him look more like he could actually fly. Let's give his arms like some extra length and decrease the length of his legs to put more of the weight in the shoulders because that's where all the power needs to reside in order to make him fly. So then I thought pterodactyl. Okay, let's make his arms more like pterodactyl arms with little bits of wing coming off of the bottom ends of it. And then when I said, okay, well, he won't be a king. Let's not make him the king because just for the simple reason of following that example of those shows I mentioned. So he's a prince who aspires to kingmanship. But if he isn't prepared to be king, how does he respond to that? See, this is just the kind of logical questions that I just ask myself when I'm exploring a character. And this goes for whether I'm reinterpreting a He-Man character or my own characters. He's not a king. He aspires to be king. Why isn't he ready? Well, there's a couple ways you could go about doing that. He could be a brat. He could be somebody who is, you know, was destined to be king, but, you know, the father's punishing him. You're not ready to be king. You have to go learn humility or whatever. Okay, that's a possibility. Maybe it's a waiting game, you know? It's like a Prince William kind of thing where it's like, well, I got to wait for the succession. When dad kicks off, then I'll get the job. And maybe he does feel he's ready, and maybe he is ready. That's a possibility. Or maybe he thinks he's ready, and by all appearances, he's ready, but he doesn't he's so stuck on the pomp and the procedure and the etiquette of kingliness, he hasn't fully understood the wisdom of kingliness. Ah, that's interesting. That's something I hadn't seen before in one of these characters. So when you meet him in the first episode where he shows up, or the first issue where he shows up, he comes off as being, yeah, I'm a king. But through crisis situations, we find out that, yes, he's got it all on paper, kingliness, but in practical application, he's not ready yet. He's not quite that wise yet. He's kind of a snob. Not a brat, but a snob. It's a different thing. So as I got further into these explorations of these characters, I started spotting opportunities to reinvent their personality as much as their look. In certain cases, you know, like with He-Man and Prince Adam and Teela, really well-covered, well-developed characters in the series for what they were, I didn't feel like I needed to do anything new with them. There was no place to go internally with the character that hadn't been, that needed further fleshing out. Now let's talk about Adam just for a second, because I did reinterpret Adam quite a bit. I made him much slighter, less athletic than any previous interpretation, and more kid-like. You know, I intentionally gave him a little bit of a Justin Bieber-ish look, because again, trying to point this at kid, trying to make this appealing to, say, an 8 to 10 or 11-year-old. And it is also my intention to make these characters, and listen to me talk about this like I'm actually doing this as a series. I could hope. But it's my intention to design these characters so that more girls would like them. Lots of girls like He-Man, but I would like this to be a gender-neutral show where both boys and girls could talk about the characters as excitedly. You know, sometimes it really bugs me that there are boy shows and girl shows. I know why that is, and sometimes I rejoice in a true boy show, but just as I do with a girl show. But, you know, it'd be interesting to see more shows like, say, The Smurfs, where just as many boys liked it as girls liked it. I'd like to bring that to the He-Man franchise as well. So there's that, making him less athletic, making him a little bit more pretty boy and smaller, in which, you know, as I've said before, I said in the blog post, actually there's a Saturday Supercast two-parter that I recorded well over a year ago with Kevin Cross and Sean Robert of BrandedInThe80s.com, where we unboxed a whole mess of He-Man episodes, and I shared a theory that I have on what He-Man's transformation ultimately means in a thematic sense, and I tie it into why I think, and this is something I'm going to talk about in a future Comics Are Great, why superhero secret identities are really kind of critical to the superhero genre. But anyway, yeah, so like making him smaller makes the transformation that much more, you know, reflective of the kid's fantasy of, oh, if only I could be big and strong and a grown-up. Well, now you can, Adam. You raise your sword. But also it represents that whole notion of Adam is the us as we are and should be, you know, allow ourselves to be foolish and weak and clumsy. He-Man is us as we could be, but we shouldn't stay that way for very long, because otherwise you turn into a big pompous blowhard who's throwing their weight around. Then you go, if you stay He-Man for too long, you become Zaf Brannigan, in my opinion. I mean, that's just like a general life philosophy. And that's what I think these kinds of fantasy stories sort of represent to young people. And I thought I'd get in trouble for the Cringer reinterpretation, because I made him into like more of a bobcat or house cat size, and decided that, well, I'd play him just like a cat. He wouldn't be like Scooby-Doo, where he's like a coward about everything. He'd just be as skittish as a normal cat. But that's as far as I took those reinterpretations of character, staying mostly on the visuals with those kind of characters. But with some characters like Stratos, Buzzoff, Manny Faces, I thought, okay, well, these guys, their personalities are not very well developed. Let's see what I can find as I approach them with a fresh pair of eyes. And so then we get to the latest one, Manny Faces, where this was a really fun exercise. Gosh, you know, I almost wonder if this is something that I just need to do for, like, as a regular warm-up exercise from now on, is reinterpret other people's characters like this and find out what I learn about my own storytelling investigations as a result of this. Is I looked at Manny Faces and I said, okay, what's his power? What's his chief playability factor? His faces change. And so I thought about that and I thought, well, if his faces change, then he's getting, and when he turns into a, he's got three faces. He's got a monster face, a human face, and a robot face. And when he turns into a monster in the old shows, his personality changes. He gets more savage. He gets super strong. Well, that's kind of like a new character. He turns into a robot. He becomes more cold and calculating, and he's more durable. He can pound on things for longer and not get tired like a robot would. Well, you're getting three essential characters out of that, three different characters out of faces changing. And I thought, well, gosh, if you're getting three characters, wouldn't it be interesting if you could find a way to stay true to the original design, but introduce an aspect where you're getting more physical change out of the whole deal? So when he changes into monster, he looks more monstrous. And I played around with some ideas about him actually getting bulkier in monster mode and more slight and thin in robot mode. But I felt like that took too much away from the initial concept of his name, after all, is Manny Faces. It's the faces that are important to his playability factor. The faces change, not his body. Then he just becomes sort of like a morphing character at that point. Then it's like, you know, I don't know what you'd call him at that point. Manny characters, Manny bodies. So it's the faces that need to change. Well, okay, well, we're back to where we started, aren't we? No, not necessarily. What if you just gave his face more real estate on the body? And go all MODOK style, the classic Marvel character who's basically a big head with little arms and legs sticking out. But this would be, and I'm not saying MODOK is like this, but I'm saying that, you know, the temptation could arise to make MODOK characters just because that looks so freaky cool. But in this case, it was actually to address a problem that I was trying to solve in terms of having more of his body change with the face. We'll just make the face bigger. And I was really happy with the design. It came out looking really cool. And it wasn't arbitrary. There was a logical train of thought that of answering questions that I was proposing for what I wanted to do. So, you know, 90% of the time, I would say most of my decisions are made on the page intuitively, unconsciously. I'm just looking at what feels right. But there's that 10% of the time where you're just not sure and you think you're blocked. And what I always stop to do is get back to what is the essence of this character, whether it's the essence of their personality, if it's the essence of their function in the story, or if it's the essence of what makes them, to use just dumb marketing terms, because I'm talking about toy characters, what's their playability factor? If this character was a toy, what would be the thing that they do that makes them, that would make a kid buy them instead of a different toy? Okay. Now, if you're writing a story about you and your family, that may not be a very good analogy. You know, this may only work for like really, you know, a kind of bombastic fantasy, but it works really well with these He-Man characters. And I'm interested in trying it on more characters in the future. In more different kinds of intellectual properties in the future, just to find out what I discover about my line styles, my cartooning styles, and just as a way to, gosh, you know, just like how you exercise, just how you lift weights or you do cardiovascular exercise to keep yourself in shape. These kind of fun little things, little thinking exercises, can be a really great way to sort of learn how to investigate character. As a matter of fact, I'm so electrified by this project and what's become a project that I'm seriously keeping, I'm starting to put together some notes on integrating this into my classes, as I think this could be a component of a mini comics class project. Like, you know, I've been talking lately about how I think mini comics are the probably one of the number one ways to get involved in making comics, because it's a quick done in one project. You have the satisfaction of having something in your hands very quickly, keeps your morale up, et cetera, et cetera. I've gone into this a lot lately. But I think an equal component of this would be if you are skittish about diving into character design, because it's hard after all, and you're not sure where to go. Well, I don't know what kind of story I want to tell. I don't know what kind of characters I like. Pick some characters you like and reinvestigate them, reinterpret them visually, and if possible, through their personality as well. And I think that's a great sort of warm-up exercise to get you back on the horse to making new characters. So I'll be posting more of these because I'm hooked on it now. And, you know, as Mark and Kevin and I often say on the Art and Story Show, we like to get double or triple duty out of everything we do. So even though this is just a simple warm-up thing that I'm just doing for the pure fun of it, what I am going to do when I'm done is collect all of these into a sort of character sheet, you know, put all the characters on a size chart together, and then maybe do like a double page spread illustration, Earl Norem style. Anybody who's a big He-Man fan will know who I'm talking about. Or you can look it up online, of all the characters interacting, and then basically put together like a pitch catalog for some comic companies to say, hey, please get the rights to these characters so I can do a comic aimed at kids based on these characters. That would be a fun job. But if nothing comes of it, I at least had fun just kind of keeping my my blades sharp for writing and designing characters. So who am I? I'm Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters. Thank you very much for supporting us in this project. We really couldn't do it without you. Like I said, I'm going to be posting some... Oh, well, actually, if you're listening to this on Friday, pay attention to the Twitters and the Facebooks over the course of the next 24 hours, because I'm going to be posting audio boos, photos, and hopefully even videos from the Kids Read Comics Extravaganza at the Ann Arbor Art Center on March 12th, 2011. That'll be the best place to get that information, to get the updates on what's happening there. And I don't really have a web page where all this stuff's going to be landing. So, like I said, the social media is the best place to get it while it's happening at any rate. And then I'll probably collect it all on my blog after the fact, or on the Kids Read Comics website if you want to find out after the fact. I'll link to it, or I'll mention it on the show. So I will be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody.
In today's story, you saw what happened when a stranger came to the palace. She turned out to be evil and dangerous. Of course, turning people into animals is only make-believe. But there is nothing make-believe about how dangerous some strangers can be in real life. Never accept any food or toys or money from a stranger. Don't even talk to them. And no matter what a stranger may say, never go away with them. Terrible things have happened to some kids who did. The smart thing is to just walk away, or in my case, just float away.